Tears because our baby's life has been revoked. The bond is broke, got so choke up and focus on the close up, missed our wheels, I can't reform. No God like Hocus Pocus, so don't sit back, kick back and watch the world get bushwhacked. News that's in your neighborhood is under attack. Put away the crack before the crack put you away. You need to be there when your baby's old enough to relay. Supplies are running out. Allow if you're still alive, 6 to 8 years to arrive. And if you follow them, it be out tomorrow. But if the author shun, you might as well be walking on the sun. You might as well be walking on the sun. You might as well be walking on the sun. You might as well be walking on the sun. You might as well be walking on the sun.
Good evening. You're listening to Canada on Cannabis. This is the show that believes the prohibition of marijuana is a crime against humanity. That was Smash Mouth, Walking on the Sun. I'm Craig Canada, your host tonight. And what I have planned tonight is there's a couple of items in the news I thought I would talk about. It seems we still end up discussing Proposition 19. I've been having a lot of discussions about that. Also, some memos that the FDA and Obama administration have been sending out. I went by Jabberwock the other day. I think that was Wednesday after the street fair. And they were just closing up. They said they were going to be open all night. And if anyone's listening, I'd be interested in what's going on there. There's an article on IndieBay about it. I guess they were raided. Evidently, they were robbed. And so then street people knew who did it. Pointed them out to the proprietors of Jabberwock, and so Jabberwock filed a police report, and they did nothing or something. They raided them. That's what they did. They raided Jabberwock, and so then they were evicted. The story I heard was that they weren't going to pay rent because they had been told to get out by their landlord. But then the last I talked to them, they said they were going to pay the rent, that they had a 3-day notice, and that they were going to stay and fight it out. Now, I guess that was last Wednesday, and I don't know if Robert Norris has said anything on his show this morning. I didn't listen this morning. I don't even know if he had a show. There was nobody when I came into the studio this morning, and I didn't hear anyone on the stream. So I don't know. There's a note here that says DSL update. It now appears that AT&T never installed the phone service at the transmitter, so the DSL couldn't get turned on either. We are back to square one. I haven't heard from the house when phone service will be turned on. This is April the 7th. So maybe I should just go home, because it looks like that I may not be streaming on the internet either. In fact, I think I'll check that. Well, it looks like actually I could turn on the monitor. That's what I could do. Hopefully you're listening to Canada on Cannabis, the show that's all about medical marijuana. What I think I'll do is I'll put some more music on here while I check and make sure that I'm actually going out on the internet. Let's see. Bum-ba-dum-dum. What should I put on? Oh, here we go. Last Dance with Mary Jane. Let that run.
Right, thank you very much. Thank you so much. You having fun? All right, we're just getting warmed up. Yeah.
underwear, looking down from a hotel room.
It's Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, The Last Dance for Mary Jane. I hope somebody maybe is listening to Canada on Cannabis. That's me. I'm Craig Canada, and I'm your host. This is the show that believes the prohibition of marijuana is a crime against humanity. Quite frankly, I am not sure if I'm streaming on the internet or not, based on this note that is sitting right here in front of me that says DSL update 7th of April. Says it now appears that AT&T never installed the phone service at the transmitter, so the DSL couldn't get turned on either. Well, actually, it does seem to me that that would imply that I may not have been streaming for weeks now. Let's say we are back to square one. I haven't heard from the house when phone service will be turned on, and I don't really know quite what that means. If you happen to be listening on the internet, it would be nice if you would give us a call here at 831-427-3772 to let me know whether or not anyone can hear me. We definitely are not broadcasting on FM 101.1 at the moment. So who knows what's going on here. But I am, one thing I'm sure of is that I am Craig Canada. And this is Canada on Cannabis. Actually, this is Freak Radio on something. Well, what will we talk about? Okay. Got a couple of memos here. Let's start with the Hague memo, maybe, shall we? I could just read you this article, I suppose. It's not that long. This was published in Denver Westward. It's westward.com, and the name of the article is Medical Marijuana. Does Melinda Haig's memo foreshadow federal MMJ raids in Colorado? Now, there's been 26 dispensaries were raided in Montana several weeks ago. Federal government has been conducting raids all across the country in medical marijuana states, doing everything they can to disrupt safe access to patients. Anyway, this article, again, Medical Marijuana, does Melinda Haig's memo foreshadow federal MMJ raids in Colorado, appeared, was published on March 25th, 2011 in Westward, which is out of Colorado in Denver. And so I'll read the article, kill some time here. While medical marijuana is legal in Colorado, it remains against U.S. law, and the push and pull between the state and the feds continues to concern the local MMJ community. Case in point, the Haig Memo. A letter sent in February by California-based U.S. Attorney Melinda Haig promising that federal crackdowns on dispensaries still will continue despite local laws allowing medical marijuana. Read it below, and I will read it for you. Does this mean medical marijuana businesses in Colorado should be worried? The folks at the Cannabis Therapy Institute certainly think so. In a recent release, also on view below, CTI argues that the Haig missive sent to the Oakland City Attorney in response to a request for MMJ-related guidance from the community city council clarifies a 2009 memo from Deputy Attorney General David Ogden. And I may read that one for you, too. That document directed U.S. attorneys not to target medical marijuana businesses in areas where they're legal as long as they're following state law. The Ogden memo didn't protect Highlands Ranch MMJ grower Chris Bartkiewicz, who was convicted of violating federal cultivation laws. Bartkiewicz thought he was legal by Colorado standards, a matter of some dispute, but his attorney Joseph St. Veltri was not allowed to use a medical marijuana defense in court. However, Bartkiewicz's arrest last year following his appearance on 9 News wasn't followed by dozens of wholesale busts on medical marijuana growers and businesses, whose operations are governed by recently finalized regulations developed by the Colorado Department of Revenue. In the wake of the Haig memo, however, Drug Enforcement Administration raids have taken place in California and Montana. Could Colorado be next? We put that question to Jeff Dorschner, spokesman for the U.S. Attorney's Office in Colorado. In conversation, he certainly doesn't portray the Haig memo as having superseded Ogden's in the eyes of John Walsh, his boss. In Colorado, the U.S. attorneys relies on the Ogden memo to provide guidance specifically as it pertains to how best to utilize our resources when it comes to marijuana prosecutions, Dorschner says. Our focus in the District of Colorado remains on large-scale drug trafficking organizations, and that would include large marijuana grows. But again, it would have to be in the context of the Ogden memo. Does Dorschner's statement mean Haig's letter shouldn't be construed as setting federal policy? If you look at an organizational chart at the Department of Justice, U.S. attorneys are all on a parallel line, he replies. Then they report up the chain of command to various officials in Washington. He adds that the Ogden memo, when it was written, was issued by the Deputy Attorney General of the United States, who was authorized to set guidance. In other words, Walsh is bound by the Ogden memo, not by Haig's. So does that mean a significant escalation in raids here isn't in the cards? The U.S. attorney evaluates medical evaluates marijuana matters on a case-by-case basis, again using the Ogden memo as a guide as to how best utilize resources, Dorshner reiterates. That is something this U.S. attorney has not consistently has done consistently since he was sworn into office. Presumably, then, the Berkowitz case might provide a better gauge of Walsh's approach than does the Hague memo. Walsh was confirmed last August, months after Berkowitz was indicted. And while he didn't drop the prosecution when he took office, he signed off on a plea agreement that sentenced Berkowitz to 5 years, far less than the 40 to 60 year jolt he might have received. Well, these words reassure local advocates fearful that Hague's letter translates to open season on medical marijuana. Judge for yourself after paging down to read the Hague memo and aforementioned Cannabis Therapy Institute release, which is what I'm just about to do, and you'll just have to sit there and wait a minute while it, oh, that wasn't too long, loads. Not that long at all. However, it's probably going to take me a few minutes to get this thing large enough that I can read it. It's, quite large, and, it doesn't look like crapo. It's not going to let me view the entire thing in a single screen. Large enough that I can read. Isn't that special? Okay, this is very small. This is February 1st, 2011. John A. Russo, Esquire. This is from the U.S. Department of Justice, United States Attorney, Northern District of California. Again, I said it's February the 1st, 2011. From Melinda Hague, United States Attorney. John A. Russo, Esquire. Is he titled royalty or something? Oakland City Attorney, 1 Frank Agua Plaza. You don't need to know the address. Anyway, dear Mr. Russo, I write in response to your letter dated January the 14th, 2011, seeking guidance from the Attorney General regarding the City of Oakland Medical Cannabis Cultivation Ordinance. The U.S. Department of Justice is familiar with the city's solicitation of applications for permits to operate, quote, industrial cannabis cultivation and manufacturing facilities, unquote. Pursuant to Oakland Ordinance Number 13033, Perrin, Oakland Ordinance, Perrin, thesis, period. I have consulted with the Attorney General and the Deputy Attorney General about the Oakland Ordinance. This letter is written to ensure there is no confusion regarding the Department of Justice view of such facilities. As the Department has stated on many occasions, Congress has determined that marijuana is a controlled substance. Congress placed marijuana in Schedule 1 of the Controlled Substance Act, and as such, growing, distributing, and possessing marijuana in any capacity other than as part of a federal authorized research program is a violation of federal law, regardless of state laws permitting such activities. The prosecution of individuals and organizations involved in the trade of any illegal drugs and the disruption of drug trafficking organizations is a core priority of the department. This core priority includes prosecution of business enterprises that unlawfully market and sell marijuana. Accordingly, while the department does not focus its limited resources on seriously ill individuals who use marijuana as part of a medically recommended treatment regimen in compliance with state law, as stated in the October 2009 Ogden Memorandum, we will enforce the CSA vigorously against individuals and organizations that participate in unlawful manufacturing and distribution activity involving marijuana, even if such activities are committed under state law. The department's investigative and prosecutorial resources will continue to be directed toward these objectives. Consistent with federal law, the department maintains the authority to pursue criminal or civil sanctions for any CSA violations whenever the department determines that such legal action is warranted. This includes, but is not limited to, actions to enforce the criminal provisions of the CSA, such as Title 21, Section 841, making it illegal to manufacture, distribute, or possess with intent to distribute any controlled substance, including marijuana. Title 21, Section 856, making it unlawful to knowingly open, lease, rent, maintain, or use property for the manufacturing, storing, or distribution of controlled substances. And Title 21, Section 846, making it illegal to conspire to commit any of the crimes set forth in the CSA. Just interject here, we got five publicly traded companies right now. So if you own stock in those companies, I've got to tell you about some of those developments too later on. But if you own stock in any of these companies, does that fall under this? So if you go and spend $42 and buy however many shares you can get for that, does that mean you're subject to federal prosecution? Anyway, continuing with this memo from Melinda Hagg. First they had Barfwell. And where do these people get these names? Barfwell, Hagg, Melinda Hagg. Not Hague, though it's similar. And well, I won't go into genealogy and names. Hague and Hag, H-A-A-G and H-A-I-G are about the same thing, actually. But anyway, back to finishing the memo. So is it legal? It's illegal to conspire to commit any of the crimes set forth in the CSA, including marijuana. Federal money laundering and related statutes, which prohibit a variety of different types of financial activity involving the movement of drug proceeds, may likewise be utilized. The government may also pursue civil injunctions and the forfeiture of drug proceeds, property traceable to such proceeds, and property used to facilitate drug violations. So they're going to steal everything they can, huh? The department is concerned about the Oakland Ordinance's creation of a licensing scheme that permits large-scale industrial marijuana cultivation and manufacturing, as it authorizes conduct contrary to the federal law and threatens the federal government's efforts to regulate the possession, manufacturing, and trafficking of controlled substances. Accordingly, the government is carefully considering civil and criminal legal remedies regarding those who seek to set up industrial marijuana growing warehouses in Oakland pursuant to licenses issued by the City of Oakland. Individuals who elect to operate industrial cannabis cultivation and manufacturing facilities, quote, will be doing so in violation of federal law. Others who knowingly facilitate the actions of the licensees, including property owners, landlords, and financiers, should also know that their conduct violates federal law. Potential actions the department is considering include injunctive actions to prevent cultivation and distribution of marijuana and other associated violations of the CSA, civil fines, criminal prosecutions, and the forfeiture of any property used to facilitate a violation of the CSA. As the Attorney General has repeatedly stated, the Department of Justice remains firmly committed to enforcing the CSA in all states. I hope this letter assists the City of Oakland and potential licensees in making informed decisions regarding the cultivation, manufacture, and distribution of marijuana. Very truly yours, Melinda Hagg, U.S. State Attorney General, United States Attorney for the Northern District of California. Well, isn't that nice? I have another one here. This is to the Eastern District of Washington. Now, that was the Northern District of California. This is the Eastern District of Washington. The article I just read you mentions these and is asking the question, is Colorado next? And the answer is it very well could be. I wonder if I'm over-modulating. I don't think I could possibly be over... No, that's not too much. Not too much at all. Okay. You're listening to Canada on Cannabis. This is the show that believes the prohibition of marijuana is a crime against humanity. There's links to these articles and a number of videos and... pretty much everything I'm talking about in the show and further information, if you go to my blog, and the address for my blog is www.palmspringsbum.org/blog. And that's one word, Palm Springs Bum, PalmSpringsBum. www.palmspringsbum.org/blog. And on the right-hand side, in the sidebar on the right-hand, there's a fan box for Facebook with a little slider in it. Basically, it's my wall for my page, Palm Springs Bum for my blog. It's a Facebook wall. And so in this fan box, there's a scroll box, and you can either... well, you can scroll down, and there's various links about the things that I'm talking about here and videos and things I find of interest. Or you can, oh, yes, be a fan and click and say you like my page and go to Facebook. And there you have my wall, and you've got my news feed there with news items for various sources, like ASA, for instance, which I... sort of prompted me to go through these memos with you. Is anybody listening, by the way? Am I streaming on the internet? The call-in number here is 831-427-3772. But as I was saying, in the right hand of my blog, under the fan page, in the sidebar on the right, in the fan box, you can are links for all these items. So, as soon as I have a drink of a kiwi strawberry here, I'm going to read. This one was sent to the Eastern District of Washington. That squeaking that you may or may not be hearing is the thing that holds the microphone up. Let's move this around a little bit. That will help. Yes. So... oh, this is on www.justice.gov/USAO/WAE/... oh, I'm not going to read that whole address. It's the Department of Justice. And this is the United States Attorney's Office for Eastern District of Washington. It's April the 6th, 2011. The title is Marijuana Stores Violate Federal Law. It says, for immediate release, it's a press release, from the United States Attorney's Office. And what it says is, Dateline Spokane. Spokane. That's how they say it at Washington, isn't it? Today, Michael C. Ormsby, United States Attorney for the Eastern District of Washington, announced that he has notified landlords that marijuana stores are illegal and warned them of the penalties they may face. Marijuana continues to be prohibited by federal law, and specifically marijuana stores are subject to enforcement action and stringent federal penalties. Under federal law, the possession or distribution of marijuana remains illegal despite state law. You know, I need to turn something off here. Yeah, there's no need at all to have that running. State law. Back to this memo. This is from Spokane, from the Eastern District of Washington, United States Attorney's Office. In 2001, the Food and Drug Administration, FDA, and the Drug Enforcement Administration, DEA, thoroughly analyzed the relevant medical, scientific, and abuse data and concluded that marijuana continues to meet the criteria for placement in Schedule 1 of the Controlled Substances Act. The Food and Drug Administration reiterated this determination in April 2006, stating in a news release, "Marijuana is listed in Schedule 1 of the Controlled Substances Act, CSA, the most restrictive schedule. The Drug Enforcement Administration, DEA, which administers the CSA, continues to support the placement, And FDA concurred because marijuana met the three criteria for placement in Schedule 1 under 21 U.S.C. 812B1. In other words, e.g., marijuana has a high potential for abuse, has no currently accepted medical use and treatment in the United States, and has a lack of accepted safety for use under medical supervision. Furthermore, there is currently sound evidence that smoked marijuana is harmful. A past evaluation by several Department of Health and Human Services, HHS, agencies, including the Food and Drug Administration, FDA, Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, and National Institute for Drug Abuse, concluded that no sound scientific studies supported medical use of marijuana for treatment in the United States, and no animal or human data supported the safety or efficacy of marijuana for general medical use. There are alternative FDA-approved medications in existence for treatment of many of the proposed uses of smoked marijuana." Every word that I just read is a total damn lie, and I could spend 5 hours here telling you why. And I suppose that's what I could do if I run out of things to talk about. But finishing this little press release here from the Eastern District of Washington, the United States Attorney's Office, Eastern District of Washington. "The Office of National Drug Control Policy supports multifaceted prevention and treatment programs and firmly opposes the legalization of marijuana and all illegal drug use. The voters approved a ballot initiative in 1998, which removed the state-level criminal penalties for physician-prescribed marijuana. In November 2008, the state adopted a rule that authorized a 60-day supply of no more than 24 ounces and no more than 15 plants of marijuana." That's not a 60-day supply, not for somebody that's really sick. Somebody that's really sick is going to use as much as 4 ounces a month. Irv Rosenfeld, by the way, is saying no. Irv Rosenfeld gets his supply from the federal government. They sent him 11 ounces a month. They grow it in Mississippi. And they sent him 11 ounces a month pre-rolled in a tin, and he would die without the stuff. He smokes one after the other. The stuff that they grow in Mississippi is such swag he has to smoke one after the other. But he would die without it. Anyway, continuing on with this memo, "The voters approved a ballot initiative in 1998 which removed the state-level criminal penalties for physician-prescribed marijuana. In November 2008, the state adopted a rule that authorized a 60-day supply of no more than 24 ounces and no more than 15 plants of marijuana. The proliferation of marijuana store, but first of all, 24 ounces and 15 plants, and that just doesn't work out. It doesn't work. Those numbers have 15 plants. You're going to produce more than 24 ounces out of 15 plants. If you stagger them, it's still you're going to end up with more than the limit. Are not 24. Basically, you're going to have to give it away or destroy it if you're going to have 50. Let's not get hung up on that. Let's finish the memo. Quote, "The proliferation of marijuana stores, which are not authorized under state law, suggests that drug traffickers are attempting to avoid application of state law through the use of these stores." read that for you again. The proliferation of marijuana stores, which are not authorized under state law, suggests that drug traffickers are attempting to avoid application of state law through the use of these stores. U.S. Attorney Mike Ormsby stated, "Drug traffickers cannot hide behind the law simply by claiming there are medical marijuana stores," said Mr. Ormsby. Why not? According to information gathered by drug enforcement authorities, there are currently over 40 stores in Spokane County alone, more than any other county in the state. Many of these stores are located close to schools, parks, and playgrounds where children are often present. Quote, "Additionally, many of these stores are conducting a high volume, high dollar business, far from the allegations of the operators that they are furnishing marijuana to patients with debilitating medical conditions," added Mr. Ormsby. "Our goal is to first seek voluntary compliance with the law by notifying property owners of the non-conforming use of their property, with the expectation that they will take appropriate action. If they do not, the U.S. Attorney's Office will determine the appropriate law enforcement response, which could include the forfeiture of the property used to facilitate the crimes," said Mr. Ormsby. There are two targets to our enforcement action: the operators of the stores and the owners of the real property where the stores operate. The property owners have been notified of the penalties associated with renting property to those operating the stores, as they may be unaware of the ramifications of such action. In other words, they sent them all threatening letters. Mr. Ormsby said he hopes that notice to the landlords will lead to voluntary compliance and eviction of those illegally distributing marijuana. On the other hand, quote, "We are preparing for quick and direct action against the operators of the store," quote, Mr. Ormsby said. "We intend to use the full extent of our legal remedies to enforce the law." Well, it's a law that has no basis in reality. There was an article. Let me see if I can find that article. It was in the Toledo Blade, was where it was. Toledo Blade. But it was probably the biggest collection of propaganda that I've seen in a long time. Let's see, Montana last week. Montana legislature. Both houses have voted to repeal that state's medical marijuana law, and it's on the government's desk. If he signs it, I guess that means that Montana's medical marijuana law will be repealed. I don't quite understand that. That doesn't really make sense to me, because in California, the legislature can't do that unless the initiative gives them permission to do so. But I guess in Montana, they can get by with that, and now I gotta... Oh, sneeze. I'm allergic to something in here. So, I was talking about... what I'm trying to do now is... if you go to my blog, www.palmspringsbum.org/blog, and look in the right-hand sidebar under my fan box, you'll see, or actually you should click on that and go to my fan page on Facebook, and I have some discussions. And there's one here I wanted to talk about a minute. It was on a thread by, here it is. I think this was it. Discussion about an article in Toledo. Yes, the Toledo Blade, and the title of this is Fixed Marijuana Law. And, you know, they talk, this is in the context of that memo I was reading from Eastern Washington regarding the dispensaries. And The Toledo Blade is making this same argument, this article about Michigan's marijuana law, and they've been having holy hell up there in Michigan, and they may be into, they may have a repeal effort in Michigan on their marijuana law. The government there is doing everything it can to oppose the will of the people there and everywhere else. But this article, it was in the Toledo Blade about Michigan's marijuana law, says, quote, there have been reports of unscrupulous physicians who are willing to certify virtually anybody for the program. Well, now, my response to that is rather than narrowing down the reasons for which people would qualify to use medical marijuana, if you do that, you've lost. You just shouldn't appease them. What you should do... Well, first of all, notice the word unscrupulous. It's very biased reporting here. It's yellow journalism. William Randolph Hearst would be proud, and maybe if I have time, I'll tell you a few things about what I think. Tell you what I think of John Hoffel and the Los Angeles Times, a reporter. He's their marijuana reporter. But anyway, back to this, and I guess I should start from the top. The quote from the Toledo Blade was, quote, there have been reports of unscrupulous physicians who are willing to certify virtually anybody for the program, unquote. Unscrupulous? There's no bias in this article. What is unscrupulous about protecting someone from arrest and prosecution for using an herb that has never killed anyone? Particularly while over 10% of America is hooked on some kind of SSRI, and 5% of those will develop manic psychosis as a result. You see how this the thing is, the politics of acquiescence is the politics of failure. These people, unless you attack them, like I did, they have moved the center to the left. I mean, to the right, and they have won. They have moved the center to the right, and they have won. You got to push back on them. It's like California has the only medical marijuana law that allows psychiatric patients, and the psychiatric patients are about 30% of medical marijuana patients in California. The largest demographic at 60% is pain patients. Next is psychiatric patients. This is for depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder. It's particularly good for bipolar disorder. It stabilizes bipolar individuals, and it actually, there have been studies that they test higher on IQ tests. It clears their thinking. So there's all sorts of sleeping if you can't, insomnia. There's all sorts of psychiatric applications for marijuana. California is the only state. What has happened since 1996 is that there has been this 10% solution. Okay, you've got 30% of medical marijuana patients use it for psychiatric conditions. 10% use it for 90% use it for pain, and so that leaves 10%. And so you've got this short list. This is AIDS, cancer, cachexia. What's where you can't eat, and chemo. Well, cancer is only about 3 or 6% of patients, and so this whole short list of diseases put together is less than 10% of medical marijuana patients. And the fact is that, by and large, 90%. Well, first it was like 50%. You cut out the psychiatric patients, so that in California is the only state. So that's, you got 14 other states where some 30% of the patients don't qualify. Most of them do allow for pain. As I said, California is the only one that allows psychiatric conditions. A couple of them are going, are moving to allow it for PTSD. I believe one allows it for, Oregon allows it for Alzheimer's, rage, and I guess you could debate whether that's psychiatric or not. They're going for the 10% solution, where you get to states now that won't allow it for pain, and you can't grow it like New Jersey. this attrition, this ongoing attrition. And so these arguments these people are making, like this one that brought me on, that I'm pointing out here, quote, there have been reports in the Toledo Blade, quote, there have been reports of unscrupulous physicians who are willing to certify virtually anybody for the program. Well, your response to that is to start by saying, what is unscrupulous about protecting someone from arrest and prosecution for using an herb that has never killed anyone? And then go on and talk about all the medical uses of that there are for marijuana, and they're just tremendous. It's totally unbelievable. And I guess people think it's a fraud because of that, but it really does work. Now, ASA, in conjunction with these memos, ASA has announced, get this, Obama is going to be launching his campaign, his 2012 presidential campaign on 420. On April 20th in San Francisco, Obama is going to be launching his presidential campaign. That's right. It's not a joke. That's what he's doing. Now, is this the right? Here we go. This is from Americans for Safe Access. It was published on April 7th on Facebook. It's by Sacramento Americans for Safe Access. Patients, activists, and friends. With recent federal activity, banking and taxation issues, medical cannabis patients going to jail, and numerous other factors challenging our community, now, more than ever, it is important for us to join together to end the abuse. ASA will be joining others outside Obama's 2012 campaign launch event in San Francisco on April the 20th to highlight his failures on this issue. And his failures, remember him making a joke out of the, what was that online thing where the most asked question was about marijuana, wanting to end the prohibition, and he just got on the news in his town hall and poo-pooed all these people on the internet. Well, anyway, let me continue with this ASA call to action. ASA will be joining others outside Obama's 2012 campaign launch event in San Francisco on April the 20th to highlight his failures on this issue. To further bring attention to the harms of our country's medical cannabis laws, ASA is organizing a National Day of Action on May 2nd. The day Dale Schaefer and Molly Fry must surrender themselves to serve their 5-year prison sentence. We are hosting rallies across the country demanding patients' rights. With the main rallies in Sacramento, where Dale and Molly are surrendering themselves, and at the Department of Justice in Washington, D.C. This day of action will bring national attention to the fact that patients are still at risk of incarceration under the Obama administration, and that change is needed now. Please join us tomorrow at 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to discuss the details. This was on April 7th, so I guess that was a couple of days ago. So we have, this is from Steph Sharon. This is a call to action by ASA. Obama is going to be launching his campaign on 420 of all days after raiding 26 dispensaries in Montana. After investigating, Harborside's under investigation for tax evasion, and Paul Stanford in Oregon is under investigation. These are two huge operators. Harborside pulls in $28 million a year, and Stanford has operations. I believe these are clinics. They write recommendations in numerous states, and so he's probably doing far more than $28 million a year. But the issue here is that the government says that you cannot deduct cost of sales from your revenues to get net income. In other words, you're selling marijuana, and so you're working on a 100% margin or a 20% margin or whatever you're working on. Anyway, you cannot deduct the cost of marijuana from your revenue, from your sales, to get a net income. In other words, they're saying that your entire revenue is net income. That's what this issue is about, with Stanford and with Harborside. Actually, Lynette Shaw's Lynette Shaw in Fairfax in Marin County has the oldest operating medical marijuana dispensary in the world. It was opened in 1997 or 1998. It was after the bust of the Cannabis Buyers Club in San Francisco in 1996, and so that would be 1997 or 8 she opened it. It's been open ever since. And so now the feds are going after her for tax evasion, and she's filing civil suit. And good luck to Lynette. She was actually a proponent of Proposition 19, and she said some very nasty things about me because I was opposed to Prop 19. But I do hope that wish her well with the case, Lynette Shaw. And you're listening to Canada on Cannabis. It's 8 o'clock, and for 7 o'clock, and for all I know, I've been talking to myself for an hour. I'm not sure if I'm streaming on the internet. I do see that they did have a show playing when I came in, and I'm assuming they had that doing so because it was streaming the internet. We've got a call-in number here. It's 831-427-3772. If you want to talk about this or anything else. So I've read that, I've talked about that, I've talked about that, I've talked about that. It's time for me to put on some music is what we got, what it's time for here. Let's see, what should I put on for you people? Something long so I can smoke a cigarette. Actually, I think what I'll do is I'll put on the last 20 minutes of this video that really pissed me off. God, it made me mad when I actually listened to it. Dale Sky Claire saying she didn't have anything to do with the taxes and so forth. And it was her and... Well, her employer, Dale Sky Claire, is the chancellor of Oosterdam U in Oakland. It's a university. She calls herself a chancellor. She got up in at the hemp con debate. This is before the election, and declared that tomatoes are taxed in California. And no, Mrs. Chancellor of Oosterdam U, they are not taxed in California. Either you've never been in a grocery store, you're lying through your teeth. In any case, calling yourself a chancellor of Oosterdam U. Well, anyway. And so she's saying that they didn't have anything to do with these taxes that have sprung up in all the cities. Los Angeles passed Measure M in March, March the 15th or something like that. 5% tax on medical marijuana on top of 9.75% sales tax. And by the way, the only reason, there's no law. The first law in California, the very first law in California regarding taxing medical marijuana, or any marijuana for that matter, in recent times, since the Marijuana Tax Act of 1937, was Measure F in Oakland. And Measure F in Oakland was sponsored... Well, it was the brainchild of Oosterdam U, who Dale Sky Claire Jones is the chancellor of. Now, there were two proponents of Proposition 19. They were Jeff Jones, whom Dale Sky Claire Jones is married to, and Richard Lee. These were the two official proponents of Prop 19. Now, they put Measure F on the ballot in Oakland, which was a 1.8% tax on medical marijuana. A sin tax. It was the first one. Now, Tommy Amiano's legislation specifically and explicitly and emphatically exempted medical marijuana from the taxes or the prohibitive licensing and fees. Specifically, emphatically, explicitly exempted them. So did every other initiative, but they didn't make the ballot because they weren't paid for by Richard Lee, who spent $1.4 million to pay for the signature drive to put Proposition 19 on the ballot, which authorized the government to tax, regulate, license, and administer without limitation marijuana in every possible way, up to and including banning commercial distribution and cultivation. Banning any commercial cultivation or distribution, either at the city or the county level. At the local level, it further specified that in order for any commercial distribution or cultivation to be legal, it had to be taxed. Well, thank you very much. As a patient who, you know, patients need several ounces a month. Oh. Yeah, it does kind of make you want to upchuck when you think about these people. So here at this Next Step conference, which was in Los Angeles, this is normal, in Los Angeles on the 19th of March, 2011, Dale Skye and Clara Jones gets up and talks about how, you know, these taxes weren't our fault. We were misunderstood. We just didn't have enough. We had nothing to do with it, and we're the ones who are going to be protecting you. You need us to deal with the legislatures to get them to stop taxing you. Now they started the first. This is what they do. And now I like these people. I'm from Alabama, and used to have Elmer Gantry's come through with their. With their floating revivals and tents, you know, they'd come in and rip off people for a while until somebody finally had enough of it and ran them out of town. They'd go to the next town. So that's what these people remind me of. And so since I don't really know if I'm streaming on the internet or not, and if anyone's listening, I'm going to put this video on and let you listen to it. And actually, instead of doing that, I think I'll put this one on by Dennis Perrone, actually. This was posted on YouTube the 28th of September and 10. I wanted to play this article, this one anyway. And this is Dennis Perrone. It's 5 minutes and 16 seconds. Huh. Yeah, I guess that's long enough. So I'll let this queue up. And he's talking about Proposition 19. And I was looking, I just happened to stumble across this the other day. Actually, I think it's the first time I've seen it. But it seemed to me particularly appropriate now. It seemed to me more resonant. It seems to have more, what he's saying has a lot more resonance now, I think, than then. Dennis was supposed to speak at in Denver. Normal is having their big powwow April 20th in Denver, since Colorado... is the big cash register right now in the marijuana movement. And so Normal's having their big powwow there on April the 20th. And Dennis Perrone, and I don't think this was Normal. It was another event leading up to it. And so Dennis Perrone had been invited to speak there. But this guy, Tim Martin, who is just a real little bastard, I mean, God, what a punk, doesn't know his ass from the hole in the ground. Sure, I mean that. Regarding the movement, I've had discussions, correspondence with him on Facebook regarding issues, and he is just he really does not understand, I don't think, much of anything. And he was going off on about Perrone being... Perrone was raided on the anniversary before the election. It was August the 25th, I think, something like that, last year, which was the 14th anniversary of the raid of the San Francisco Cannabis Buyers Club in 1996. He was raided on that day. Now, by the way, Dennis Perrone was fired by Extra Damn U He was employed there as a professor, talking about Dale Sky, Claire Jones, and Jeff Jones, and Richard Lee, and the Oakland Gang of Four, and Proposition 19, and how that they're setting, almost set the movement back 40 years with their damn proposition. I've actually got an article, The Real Debate About Proposition 215, on my, The Real Debate About Prop 19. Prop 19 on my blog. It's in one of the most viewed. It's on the sidebar on the right. You should click it and take a look at it. And also, what lawyers have to say about Prop 19, another of my most popular articles. And also, while I'm at it, plugging my articles, I got one called, what is it called? Oakland's Marijuana Price, Tax, Sales, and Production. It's a set of tables I made up based on figures released by the Oakland City Council that shows you how much tax that patients will be paying per ounce under the Oakland laws with their 8.75, I think it is, percent sales tax and their 5% sin tax on medicine, and then their $90,000 licensing fees for dispensaries. When you roll that up all up into the, I guess they're doing 6,000 pounds, or perhaps it's tons of production a year. I think it's pounds, probably up to 8,000 now. Anyway, I don't remember the exact figure, but these are articles that are relevant to this discussion that I appear to be having with myself. and so, I will play for you now. It looks like it's cuter. This is Dennis Perrone, and he's talking about Prop 19 and so on and so forth. And so, as I said, this is on YouTube. And if you also, in the right sidebar of my blog, in my fan box, my Facebook fan box, you can scroll down and you can find a link for this video there. I posted it on my wall for Palm Springs Bum. So, with any luck.
All movement has to be focused. We have gone through 50 years of prohibition, 50 years of propaganda against us. We survived. That is a testament to our staying power. We have survived this 50 years of prohibition, incarceration. We have been thrown in jail. Have our houses robbed, our children robbed of us, denigrated to second-class citizens of America. Now it is our turn to rebuild who we are, to believe in us and know what we're doing is right. And to do that, we have to start at local level, which I did. I say start local, think global. And now we're on a global level. Now let's start thinking, what is good for the United States? What is good for the world? How can we change the world? And right now, we have 14 states. We could use more. We could use more to get momentum going. We have momentum, but more. And it can all be done through Health and Human Services. One person can reschedule marijuana. She just find out, wake up tomorrow morning, find out marijuana does have, marijuana does have medical value. It's clearly in the wrong schedule. No medical value, it has medical value. Even if it's just relaxation, even if it's just that, it has medical value. It also, we know what it does. It gives you the appetite, munchies. There's no drug on the market that'll ever give you the munchies. There's no drug that'll ever make you hungry. Marijuana makes you hungry. People for anorexia, it's important. So we just wake up tomorrow morning, find out that, and she could reschedule marijuana. And this war would end. And the treaties, the international treaties of banning marijuana, they would fade away. It's all coming from us. So much pain in the world is coming from the United States and our misconception of marijuana. That it's our obligation to change this for the world. The world is watching us. They're watching us and they're seeing this Prop 19. It's ironic because Prop 19, maybe 72, was legalization. Prop 19 was not legalization. Anybody over 18. And we can concentrate on the Health and Human Services. we can work in our backyards at a local level to prove the image of marijuana and to show the medical benefits of it. And I think we're on the right road towards that. I think it's inevitable. I think everyone sees where this is going. Marijuana will be legalized. When? How much suffering do we have to have to endure before it is done? Well, if this thing is passed, we have to go a longer time. I'm just so everyone's so impatient. We've suffered enough. I almost don't trust anybody that hasn't been busted marijuana. Richard is writing a law, he's never been busted. If you haven't been busted with marijuana, you know the humiliation, you know the pain that just goes through it. The cavity searches, the hiring of lawyers, the court dates, the new to court date prohibition. It's hell. Richard has never gone through the hell. And he probably never have to go through the hell. But millions of people do go through the hell on a yearly basis. And for them, we have to do this. We have to change this. By voting no, voting yes on 19, you will set us back 4 years, at least 4 years. We have to undo what has been done. And it's so hard to do something, let alone undo it. And so, for that reason, I like always to stay focused. And this Prop 19 will pass. This November will pass. We have to do something for the future. We have to pick up the pieces of this 19 mess and start all over. Start rethinking about this. And we're on the road towards the medicalization. 3,000 years of medicalization. Can't be wrong. Let's not go wrong. And let's not delude ourselves what we're really doing. If people say, oh, I'm getting high. What does that mean? What are you doing to your consciousness? What are you doing to your consciousness? What are you doing to your body? You are doing something. Something that explains a little bit more than just getting high. So be honest with ourselves. Be truthful. And treat the plant with respect. And we will do it together.
That was Dennis Brown, the author of Proposition 215, the guiding force behind it. You know, there's an interesting story about that. Dennis Perone and John Entwistle and Bill Panzer and a number of people were members of the Californians for Compassionate Use organization, which was going to put an initiative on the ballot. And there was two versions. But there was the conservative faction. There was a liberal faction. Dennis was part of the liberal faction. And when Dennis saw what the conservatives had come up with, he was opposed to it. He wouldn't approve it. He wouldn't approve it. And so, or support it. And so, it turns out then that they found out, Dennis and Entwistle and the liberal faction, they found out that this conservative faction had filed this other version of Proposition 215 at Sacramento. However, they had paid with a check. So John Entwistle took the liberal version, the version that is law today, to Sacramento, and paid with a money order. And so that is why you have the law in California that you have today. Otherwise, you would only be able to use marijuana for the last week or so of your life. So, I have a message here. In reply to... No, it's not in reply to the question I asked about whether I was streaming or not. You're listening to Canada on Cannabis. This is the show that believes that the prohibition of marijuana is a crime against humanity. And what do I want to do now? Well, I was talking before I played Dennis there, Perone. About Prop 19. The debate continues, and it appears that Normal is going to write an initiative, and Dale Sky Claire Jones, evidently from money given to them by who gave them money? Facebook gave them money. Did Soros throw in something? They got what, $6 or $7 million right in the last few days of the campaign. The 2011 election campaign proposition 19 last year. They got, and so evidently they're going to use that money, and they're going to all sit down and write another initiative and pay people to put it on the ballot, completely ignoring, for instance, the Jack Hare initiative. There's actually two initiatives that I know of that are written. One is written by Steve Cubby and Jack Hare's lawyer, and I guess I'd call that Jack Hare Light. And the other is a California Cannabis, Hemp, and Health Initiative, and that was written by Jack Hare. Good God, I'm overmodulating. By Jack Hare. The website is www.cchi2012.org. You should read that and take a look at it. The media and Normal seem to be completely ignoring this one. I think Michael Jolson, who is on my show, told me that they wanted a poll showing that this initiative had 60% support before they put money into it. And I think these polls cost like, I don't know, a minimum of $25,000, probably more than that, maybe $50,000. And so, Michael is actually, there's a very strong organization down in San Diego, and also I believe that one of the political consultants here in town is on board, who else is? Having his on April the 23rd, and it I should try to look that up, but I don't want to because I want to put another video on. I think I was telling you I was going to play for you again, where Dale Skye Claire really pissed me off, claiming that she had nothing, absolutely nothing, to do with the taxes that the cities are passing, such as in Los Angeles, and there was one really in Rancho Cordova, really draconian one that would have prevented medical marijuana patients. They were going to charge them a tax for growing it. I think it was like $500 a square foot or something. I think somebody worked it out that it would cause for a medical marijuana patient to grow 25 by 20, have a 25 by 25 grow, would cost them $10,000 a year under Rancho Cordova's ordinance. And so, anyway, I was talking about how Dale Skye Claire and all the proponents, these are the people that passed the first sin tax on marijuana in Oakland. Not on recreational marijuana, by the way. Recreational users aren't paying any taxes or licensing or fees. It's only medical patients that are doing that. On top of what they have to pay for their doctor and to get their recommendation, now they got to pay taxes, and they're already paying sales tax and tomatoes are not taxed in California. Necessities are not taxed. Groceries are not taxed. Crops are not taxed. Prescription medicine is not taxed. But you have to have a recommendation signed by a doctor. And even though Proposition 215 says explicitly that it may be oral, you have to have a written one. And not only a written one, but if you don't have a card, if you don't pay more money for a card, chances are they'll take you to jail if you just have a written one. You'll probably end up having the charges dismissed if you can get your doctor to verify it without charging you $500 to spend an hour as an expert witness in court. So we got to pay taxes on top of that, thanks to these people, Dale Skye Claire Jones, the chancellor of Oaksterdam U, who stood up in front of HempCon in Los Angeles last year before the election and told the assembled multitudes there that tomatoes are taxed in California. No, tomatoes are not taxed, Mrs. Dale Scott Claire Jones. And now she's lying through her teeth saying that they had nothing to do with the taxes. Yes, they did. Richard Lee was a proponent. It was Oosterdam U that put the first tax on the ballot in Oakland, Measure F. Anyway, dum-dum. Okay, this is the legalization video. And by the way, I've got on my broadcast page, go to my blog, on my broadcast page, I've got... Actually, I'm not going to play this. I'll let you do it yourself because it looks like I don't have that much long left. And I wanted to talk about some of the action in the stock market last week. It was interesting. But if you go to that video, I've got six of them. You know, I know in the last show I mentioned that I had the legalization video, but I wasn't going to play it. But it was my favorite, not the legalization, but the lawyers video, lawyers panel. And realized I didn't have it on my blog. Well, it's on there now, and I've got two more. There's six in all from the LA conference that was March 19th. They're filmed by Adela Falk. Really nice job, and they were put on YouTube. Got a burp here. Excuse me. By Wisdom Organics, and I have them all together, easily accessible on my show page. If you go to my blog and up in the right corner, there's a menu that says home, broadcast, store and contents. Store is a bunch of books. It's an Amazon collection, a collection of books from Amazon that are really important books if you're concerned about medical marijuana, marijuana legalization, the politics, the science, and so forth. But anyway, if you click on broadcast in that menu up there, up in the top right corner of my blog, it'll take you to my show page, or you could just type in www.palmspringsbomb.org/blog/Canada-on-cannabis and get these videos. And there's also videos from the conference in Berkeley, which was, when was that? In January? The end of January. Yeah. Well, actually, I think I will. Okay, so we're 40 minutes here into the, because it's there's about 15 minutes to the end of this video, and then that should give me time to then also to talk a few brief moments about some interesting developments in the penny stocks, the marijuana penny stocks. One of which is well on its way to being a dollar stock. Now, the thing about these stocks is that in order to be a dollar stock, you have to be worth $5. It's inflation. You're not considered a legitimate stock unless you're on the NASDAQ. And to be on the NASDAQ, listed on the NASDAQ, or some other exchange like the New York Stock Exchange. But in order to get it listed on the NASDAQ, I believe you have to trade above $5 for 6 months. And so one of these is currently trading at like $4.85, and the rest of them are like at 3 cents, 2 cents. One of them is at 0.9 cents. or maybe I won't talk about those. But what I'm going to do now, yes, I'm going to play this video. 40 minutes into the video from the Next Step for California Normal Conference in Los Angeles. And this is... about the last 17 minutes or the last 15 minutes of this video. I'm 40 minutes into it. This is the legalization panel. And this is Steve Gutwillig speaking here. Or maybe it's not. It doesn't look like this is going to work. Oh, why won't you work? It's just died on me. I guess it's not going to. Do what I was really hoping it would do. I know what I will do. I will forget about doing it that way, and I will. Hmm.
Let's start with an overview of where we are and where we should go from here.
That's Dale Gehringer, and I don't really want to hear that. Let's see if we can get 41-24.
Campaign and all other kinds of drug reform efforts here in California.
Oh, God.
That's not enough money to change.
How in the hell did I get two of those running?
To talk about these next steps, you know, for those of us performing, you know, staying up to win, particularly where we are in the wing realistic about how much money we have access to, how much money some of these decolonizing people are likely to get last year. And so I'm going to just, you know, say a little bit about where we are. I think we're actually in a pretty great place. That where we are in the world that was created by Proposition 19 is marijuana legalization is now squarely in the mainstream of American politics where it belongs, that the national media are now willing to cover, actually eager to cover this issue, despite, you know, in the wake of decades of what was like a de facto mainstream media blackout and even talking about this issue. And perhaps most importantly, we have forged an unprecedented coalition in support of marijuana legalization, which we'll be talking about in a panel this afternoon, what the new face of that coalition looks like that is arguably a national model. That said, there's still a pretty substantial uphill battle that we face, particularly if we're talking in the context of what a 2012 ballot initiative, for example, might look like. And that uphill battle is despite the obvious demographic advantages that will exist in 2012 with a larger, younger, more progressive electorate than the one that we saw in 2010 in the off-year election. But it's uphill because of other things. There is a historic presumption against ballot initiatives in consecutive election cycles. The opposition will arguably be more seasoned, just as we are, and potentially more intense. The mainstream media will arguably be more skeptical than they were the first time around and will report that way. But even more importantly, the uphill battle involves the vote itself, right? We not only need to get our own house in order, because obviously we all don't agree yet on what a next initiative should look like, but even more importantly, outside this room, there is far too much soft support within the electorate, within the stakeholders in the state, the people who are going to vote, who should otherwise be supporting, and particularly thinking about support from women and communities of color. And so I'll just, you know, end by saying the DPA's orientation around this process is to support the most sweeping version of ending decades of failed marijuana prohibition that can actually win. Finding the sweet spot between pushing, ending criminalization, and what the voters of the state are actually willing to support. So within that, there's a primary principle, which I just sort of named, which is ending criminalization, removing marijuana from the criminal justice system, ending mass arrests, expanding personal freedom. So for us, you know, that principle will mean that we're interested in supporting, allowing, you know, making sure that whatever the next, whatever the opposite of marijuana prohibition looks like, that it allows cultivation for personal use, an expansion of personal freedom, that we challenge this thing that came up in the last election around, you know, it was called employer rights, this notion that your boss should be able to fire you for what you do on your own time, even if it has absolutely no impact on your performance in the workplace. And we're interested in making sure that we do everything we can to protect young people from further criminalization, because there are, you know, young people are already the focus of so much law enforcement scrutiny. And if you know, particularly if you're looking at 18, 19, and 20-year-olds who are going to sort of fall, who are going to, you know, fall through the gaps, we have to make sure that we do everything we can to keep that from happening. And then there's just a last thing, which is we think it's really important that we do everything we can to acknowledge our obligation in this movement and this campaign in California, that we acknowledge our obligation to the national movement. And that means that we not only just have to draft well and run a good campaign, but we have to anticipate and consider what the inevitable federal response is going to be, because there is going to be one, whether California or Colorado or some other state is the first state to end marijuana prohibition at the state level. There's going to be blowback from the feds and conceivably from neighboring states or other states around the country. There's going to be some kind of backlash. What we do, we have a family obligation to make sure that what we do and how we run this campaign and what the reform is that we're looking for can withstand the, you know, that kind of backlash, because it is not inevitable. Those of you who have been in this movement a lot longer than I have know, particularly in the 70s, that, you know, if one state just simply ends prohibition at the state level, the dominoes are not necessarily just going to fall one after another across the country. We have to think about what we do here and its impact at the national level. Looking forward to this whole conversation today. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you very much. Our next speaker will be from Americans for Safe Access, Don Duncan. I think everybody knows around here. Been on the forefront of the ongoing war here regarding medical access in Los Angeles. Don. Yep.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for coming today. My name is Don Duncan. I'm the California Director of Americans for Safe Access, and I'm also a 10-year veteran of the medical cannabis industry. And so when I saw the title of the panel, Where We've Been, Where We're Going, I thought, wow, well, we've come a long way. And let me also say that when I look at where we're at, I'm very excited about where we're at with medical cannabis. I don't think many of us thought 15 years ago that we'd be this far along. And in 2004, when I moved to Los Angeles, I certainly did not think this city would be moving forward. And despite the controversy here, the city has moved forward. And in fact, one of the victories we can claim here in Los Angeles is that we have consistently, over the last 4 to 5 years, beat back efforts by our city attorney's office, two successive city attorneys, to ban medical cannabis. And so while we don't have a perfect ordinance, in fact, we don't even have a very good ordinance, we certainly have not had a ban or an indefinite moratorium. And so we're going to keep fighting away at City Hall and keep fighting in the courts to improve that. But when I look at where we're at for the patient's sake, I think that we're in an even better position. Because if you look in California today and cities and counties all over the state, patients have access to their medicine. And that's very important, because the true test of whether or not a medical cannabis law is working is whether or not patients get medicine. And we're very lucky in California that we don't have one of the hypothetical medical cannabis laws that looks great on paper but doesn't actually put medicine in the hands of patients. And I hope, as the other states are moving forward, that they keep in mind that the measure of success is whether or not patients get the medicine they need. As we're moving forward in California, obviously the next 2 years are going to be very important. And we are seeing right now a backlash. The pendulum is swinging in the other direction on medical cannabis. And so I would like to caution everyone, as we make plans for this year and for 2012, to be aware of the fact that we have to be sensitive to our base and to keeping our base of support. In 2008, when I went to Sacramento to lobby for the employment discrimination legislation authored by then Assembly Member Leno, we saw in the state legislature a lot of reluctance. People were worried. They said, oh, these dispensaries, they're opening up everywhere. It seems out of control. We're worried about it. And a lot of the moderate Democrats were reluctant to step up for employment rights because they didn't want to be seen as pro-Wild West mentality on medical cannabis. But we squeaked through the legislature that year. We actually got the bill passed and vetoed by the governor. And when I went back in 2010 with a much easier ask, what I found is that sentiment was even stronger in the state legislature. Lawmakers were very reluctant to support the SJR 14, which was a non-binding resolution, and it should have been a gimme. It should have been an easy one for the legislature. No money spent, no action to be taken, and they get to blame the federal government.
You're listening to Canada on Cannabis, and that was the Normal Next Steps Conference. And I really am not quite sure what happened there, but there was no there's nothing on my screen there. However, this stream that I was trying to play was playing with nothing on my screen that I could see. So I'm going to try this one more time, and just as I said before I started this, the whole reason I'm playing this is for you to hear Dale Sky Claire Jones declare that they had nothing to do with the taxes. And I think this is it right here, coming up, hopefully. This is the Next Steps for California conference, Normals National Organization for the Repeal of Marijuana Laws conference in Los Angeles on the 19th of March. And this is 45. Oh, crap, it just crapped out on me again. Why does it do this to me?
Hashing use act, medicine, because when marijuana is widely accepted as medicine and is prescribed by doctors, it cannot be taxed. And taxation, I think, was a big failure in the last bill. I think we have to address that.
Well, we were trying to tax adults, not patients. I want to make that clear, that part of the point was to subsidize patient use.
We're trying to tax adults, not patients. Okay, patients aren't adults. I get that.
Meaning you don't pay for it because we tax the hell out of the adults who are just using it for fun. And that way, it's a cover of protection. So we didn't actually ascribe a tax to patients. I just want to make that clear. But I agree with you. Pardon?
Okay, that's Dale Sky Claire Jones, the Chancellor of Oaksterdam U, who's employed Richard Lee, the proponent of Prop 19, owns Oaksterdam U, and he was a proponent of Prop 19, and Dale Sky Claire Jones is married to the other official proponent of Prop 19, Jeff Jones, and she's here saying that they didn't ascribe a tax to patients. Now, what they did in their proposition, first of all, they did ascribe a tax to patients with their Measure F in Oakland. 1.8% sin tax on medical marijuana, which I believe now has been raised to 5%. They did ascribe a tax to patients. Richard Lee was behind that. Oaksterdam U, this was their brainchild. She is the chancellor of Oaksterdam U. She is lying through her teeth when she says that we did not ascribe a tax to patients. They did. This is 44 minutes into the legalization video for the Normal Next Step Conference, Next Steps Conference in Los Angeles, March the 19th.
Well, what we were hoping was that the adults would pay for the patients.
Yeah, I want to emphasize.
So why didn't you write that into the law? Why didn't you exempt patients from the tax? Oh, wait a minute. They were hoping that the tax... What is she talking about? They were hoping... They passed the tax in Oakland on patients, claiming it will legitimize medical marijuana in the business. And now she's saying here...
That's why the California Normal's position is that we shouldn't be taxing medicine.
This is Dale Gehringer.
The current sales tax, which is charged for herbal medicines anyhow, marijuana should be treated as an herbal medicine, so the sales tax under California law is appropriate. But beyond that, we think the taxation is an issue for adult use, and it's actually sort of a carrot to lead the people to want adult use if we can offer some good tax money from them.
And if I may also make no mistake that as we walked in to have these conversations with many of these legislators, we didn't bring this subject up.
Okay, folks, did you hear that? This was Dale Sky Claire Jones, the Chancellor Not just anybody, but the chancellor. Not just any Dale Sky Claire Jones, but the chancellor of Oaksterdam U saying, we didn't bring the tax up. What do you call Measure F in Oakland, dear? The brainchild of Oaksterdam U.
They brought it up, and we knocked on their door and said, hey, we heard you were trying to slap a 40% sin tax on medicine. Can we please talk about that and try to back them down? A lot of what we were doing was trying to ease off on this sudden attack that largely happened because of, you know, the melee. If you look at who was bringing these measures into the legislature, it's all Southern California elected officials that are trying to tax it because they feel as though they're not getting their fair share, their cut for the city.
Did you hear that? It's all Southern California officials trying to tax it. No, dear. It is Richard Lee, Blue Sky Cafe in Oakland, Oaksterdam U. It is Steve D'Angelo. It is Alan St. Pierre. It's the Gang of Four in Oakland. It's Jeff Jones. What's this crap about Southern California, dear? You started it.
And so just like the melee in Oakland, and quite frankly, there was a lot of confusion between these large grow operations in Oakland and Prop 19. We had nothing to do with one another, but it was some bad timing to make it look like it was all about these big grows when all we were trying to do was protect the little guy. So there's a big difference between the perception of Prop 19.
There's another one. She says, all we were trying to do was protect the little guy. Well, now, if you read Proposition 19, what they were trying to do is make any marijuana cultivation or distribution, commercial cultivation or distribution, and that means more than 25 square feet, illegal. Unless you have a license. And they give the government at the local level, at the county level, at the city level, at the local level, the ability to regulate it in every way. They can even ban it in the county if they want to. They can set a limit on the number of licenses. They can charge as much for licenses as they want. Oakland was going to charge $210,000 for four licenses and not license anybody else. They don't have any provisions in Oakland for the mid-range. I think they have a certain number of plants per people, and I think there was something like three people could have a collective and not grow more than 100 plants collectively. I think, and then between that three people and 100 plants or whatever it was, and thousands of warehouses producing thousands of pounds, there is nothing. And there wouldn't be nothing. Back to Dale Sky Claire Jones, Chancellor of Oakland, Oaksterdam U. Mrs. Tomatoes are taxed.
19 and the reality of the written word of Prop 19. And that's, you know, the devil's in the details, and that's where it gets hard in the long and short, both how it's written and how it's discussed. We can't control what the media focuses on necessarily unless we have those millions of dollars.
Next.
We can't control what the media says unless we have those millions of dollars. In other words, they didn't have enough money to put one over on the voters is what they're saying. Anybody that read that initiative knew it was a piece of crap. Well, now then, let's see. You're listening to Canada on Cannabis. I got about 15 minutes more here. I understand that I very well may be streaming on the internet. We do have a call-in line. The number is 831-427-3772. If you'd like to call in and chat with me, you're on, this is Free Radio Santa Cruz, and donations are welcome. Go to www.freakradio.org. Or you can also go to my blog, and there's a donate button there if you care to help me offset my production cost. And I wonder if that's legal. Whatever. Let's see. So, in these last 15 minutes or so, I think I'll talk about some of the marijuana penny stocks. It appears it's difficult to say at this point what's going on with the marijuana stocks, and there's a number of them. There's six main ones. There's Canna, C-A-N-A, which is General Cannabis, Inc., and it's currently closed at $4.85 on Friday. And it's probably the most solid one of them all. Keep in mind, they're all penny stocks, and you don't put money into these that you ever expect to see again. And my browser has just frozen. Oh, lovely. Just totally frozen up. Well, fucking great. Just totally frozen up. When somebody give me a virus or something, it's totally frozen. My computer is totally frozen. I can't do... Oh, there it goes. Finally! It unfroze. Okay, what we had here was a Adobe Flash plugin has crashed. That's what that was all about. Well, let's see if it will uncrash. Oh, evidently not. I was trying to look up here, look up Google Finance and talk about the stocks a bit. But it seems that Adobe has decided that instead of me doing that, it's going to crash my browser on me. So I sit here for 5 minutes and can't do anything. Don't you just love the technical age? What are we going to do without electricity? You know, I started this show talking about Jabberwock. Does anybody know what's going on with that? I walked by today, and it looks like there was a sign on the door that said... they were going out of business in the last several days or something, and curious. I didn't see anything about this in the Sentinel. I saw a story about it that Robert Norse wrote on Indie Bay, but I didn't see anything about it in the Sentinel. I know when I did look for it in the Sentinel, I saw that the most read story, most viewed story on the Sentinel that day was about somebody who was walking around barefoot on the beach and stepped in some hot coals and burned their feet. You know, I just don't think people should be walking on the beach. Well, you should be smarter than that. I don't mean people shouldn't walk on the beach, but it just seems like that, even if it was a child... I grew up, my grandmother had a fire, that was her heat, a fireplace, an open fireplace, wood-burning fire. And as a child, I was taught, you know, they had gas heaters with the grills on them and the wood-burning fires. And you just learned, you know, fire's hot, you don't get near it, and you don't touch it, and you don't, well, anyway, I guess it's a world of child-proof lighters we live in. Google is not being very cooperative. Oh, there we go. You know, it's starting to cooperate. So Canna, General Cannabis Inc. has been holding up pretty well. It closed at $4.85, and it's up like my computer's froze up again. Won't let me do anything. I can't read you these stories I wanted to read. I can't play you any music. I can't do anything. Well, and I can't close the window. It won't let me do that either. It's just totally... locked up on me. Thank you, Adobe. Adobe Flash. Oh. So, in the last week with the stocks, first of all, CBIS, and this is Cannabis Science. Well, I was running down the marijuana stocks for you. You got CANA, General Cannabis Inc., which closed at $4.85 on Friday. You've got Medical Marijuana Inc., MJNE, which closed at 12.5 cents. You got Cannabis Medical Solutions, which closed at $0.0092. That's 0.92 cents. Cannabis Science last week closed at 0.073. That's 7.3 cents. And Green Grow Technologies closed at 2.31 cents. In the last week, Cannabis Science made an announcement. First, they announced that they had cured basal cell carcinoma with a topical cannabis extract. This announcement was made a week or two ago. And the stock spurted up to, like, I don't know, 24 or 5 cents for an hour or two. And as I said, now it's down to like 7 or something cents. And so they sent out this press release on April the 7th. And it says, Cannabis Science, U.S. biotech company developing pharmaceutical cannabis products. On March 9th, 2011, Cannabis Science announced that we would follow up our press release with medical documentation regarding the effectiveness of our cannabis extracts for treating skin cancer, as was documented photographically in our earlier press release of February 22, 2011. We are pleased to announce that we have physicians' documentation that confirms the successful treatment of basal cell carcinoma that resulted from the application of a topical cannabis extract. Please visit www.cannabisscience.com to view the breaking news of the successful results and images of the self-administered cancer treatments along with the physician's documentation after 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Today, that was Friday. And the news release continues, currently there is a tremendous amount of controversy with respect to the effects that cannabinoids have on cancers. Endocannabinoids, phytocannabinoids, and synthetic cannabinoids have demonstrated cancer-killing and anti-metastatic properties in tissue culture and in animal models. While formal proper FDA approved clinical trials that would prove or disprove the therapeutic potential of cannabis extracts for treating cancers, that's not a complete sentence. They end it with saying trials have not been carried out. Nevertheless, a significant number of anecdotal observations have accumulated that suggest people suffering from a variety of cancers appear to have been cured by ingesting what is known as Rick Simpson's hemp oil. And let's see, it says continue on the next page. Yeah, I think there was more to this press release. What they released... Yeah, let me continue reading the press release. This is Cannabis Science press release on April the 7th. There is widespread ignorance regarding the endocannabinoid system by medical professionals and laymen alike. The first hint that an endocannabinoid system existed resulted from an experiment published in 1988. Because of the endemic political and social bias against medical cannabis nurtured by decades of misinformation, Cannabis Science has chosen a path that we feel will have the greatest probability of successfully traversing the FDA approval process. Our initial test product will only be topical and will be formulated to reduce any internal consumption and thus reduce any abuse potential. With these considerations in mind, we will initially seek FDA approval for topically applied cannabis extracts for the treatment of basal cell carcinoma, a common form of skin cancer. According to the National Cancer Institute, and they give a web address here, basal cell carcinoma is the most frequently occurring cancer in the United States. Because of the horrific impact that cancer in general has on so many people worldwide, Cannabis Science has decided to make basal cell carcinoma its first target for critical clinical trial. That's from Google Finance, and you can look that up. It looks like we're just a few minutes from 8 o'clock, so I'm going to wrap this up. Also, Medical Marijuana Inc. announced that they're having a conference call on April the 30th, I believe, 10 days after 420. And they'll be announcing their new officers. They've announced that Bruce Perlowin no longer has anything to do with the company. Evidently, the reverse merger with HDDC, Canabank, has been finalized. They said they have two assets. Nobody knows what they are. I think it probably was Darman's. I think what these probably are is Darman's Weed Mart store in Sacramento that he tried opening one in Oakland, and he also has a school similar to Oaksterdam U that he's opened. So I think that may be what these two assets are that MJNA has acquired. I could be wrong. In any case, I am certainly not saying to buy this stock or any other. So let's see if there's anything. I'm probably going to have Mike Booten on next week from Trinity County. He's Grace Farms. At this very moment, they're having talks with the producer. They're hoping to do a reality TV show about a working marijuana collective, and he's hoping to also, as part of this, do marijuana miracles, where he will distribute free of charge to people, deserving people, needy people, pounds, perhaps, of medical marijuana patients. He loves to do that. And so hopefully he will have good news for us. The G4, I think it's a gaming network, has a show, TV broadcast, that they will be featuring Grace Farms on 420, I'm told. And so hopefully Mike Bootman will be my guest next week with great from Grace Farms with his wife, Tawny. You have been listening to Canada on Cannabis. This is the show that believes that the prohibition of marijuana is a crime against humanity. And with any luck, in just a second or two, I will be closing this show with a little musical interlude, perhaps. Hopefully it'll be musical. Tune in next week, folks. Canada on Cannabis. I'm Craig Canada, your host, Free Radio Santa Cruz. 101.1 FM, sometimes, but not at the moment. However, we are streaming on the internet, I think. Hold on.
soaked with the tears because a baby's life has been revoked. The bond is broke, got so choked up and focused on the close-up, Mr. Wills, okay.